Good morning. I'm Al Nettleton, a longtime member of Prairie. One of the things that we like to do on Sunday morning is to welcome you. Welcome you regardless of your religious background, regardless of your sexual orientation, of your family structure. We want you to be a member, participant at Prairie. Kathy will read our opening words.
Thank you. I'm Kathy Keenan. The opening words are by Sarah Jetty McNeil. Come in from the crisp morning air outside. Come in wearing the autumn sunlight on your face. Come carrying the turning of the set seasons in your heart. Whatever and however the greatness of life is speaking to you now, you are welcome here in our circle of friends.
Thank you.
Our chalice lighting this morning has words by Don Sky Cooley. We light our chalice this morning, grateful for the love that we experience in this beloved community. May the flame light the way for all who seek such abundance.
Our speaker this morning is someone that many of us know well, because Jennifer Parker was a member of Prairie for a long time. She is now involved in the Unity of Madison, and this is a program that she did at Unity, and the program committee found out about it and decided that it was appropriate for this morning. So we're going to thank Jennifer for doing that. But some of the other things that you might not know about Jennifer is that she is a grandmother, that she is a social worker, predominantly in private practice. She says that she is coming back to part-time. Now, I suspect that that's still taking a lot of time, knowing Jennifer and the work that she would do with her clients. So, Jennifer Parker, this morning, is going to talk about Through the Looking Glass, Affirming and Living Our Values in a Dominance-Obsessed World. Jennifer.
Am I on? And can you hear me? Okay. Let me just arrange things a little bit here. I was expecting there was going to be a meditation, and I'd be able to really ground and center myself, but maybe we can do that afterwards. Okay.
Let me just make sure.
Okay. Thank you. So let me just get used to, there we go. So as Al said, and by the way, it is so nice to see so many familiar faces as well as new faces. I'm very happy to be invited back here. And as Al said, I am a practicing therapist. I am going down, and I'm working on a book for intimate partner survivors. So one of my special interests has been working with intimate partner survivors. And in that work, I've had to focus on, it just comes up, it's like, why is there so much intimate partner violence? Well, then when we look more broadly, it's like, why is there so much rape? Why is there so much other kind of violence in our society? Why is there the incivility in terms of our discourse and so forth? So it's something that I've really been interested in looking at. And we had at Unity, I actually put together this talk. I was inspired to do it for two reasons. One was we were looking for a minister. We now just have a new minister. But during the summer we were. So many of us were stepping up to speak. And the second one was that we have something called Christmas in July, which is a fundraiser for domestic abuse intervention services. And we had a day speaker come to give a message for us. And she posed the question, how can we think in ways that promote nonviolence and respect in our society? And so that's something that I've deeply thought about. I feel like our spiritual teachings, our, you know, the principles, I reacquainted myself with Unitarian principles, with your bond of union and so forth, all of that is like an island of sanity in our society. And it sort of feels like, how I came up with the title was, it feels like stepping through the looking glass when we come from this grounding and these kinds of principles and see how the world is operating. It's like it's flipped on its side. So, but I know how hard it is for me when I'm challenged, when somebody triggers something in me to live my principles. Maybe I'm the only one, but I come into a contact with a lot of people where that's the case. And so I know that I want us to look at what makes it so hard. So as, I have to get used to how this goes. James Baldwin said, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing is changed if we don't face it. So facing these questions means increasing our consciousness of what's all at play in our society and in ourselves. I'm convinced that we can't have peace in our relationships or peace in the world unless we understand what leads us to what leads our culture and our institutions to encourage domination and separation. I loved, I forget if it was in the song or what, I love the song Weave, by the way. Unity sings Weave, so if you're not familiar with it, you know, I love that that was included today. So we're going to take a look at some of the things that lead us in the wrong directions. And in my search for answers, I read Rhianne Eisler in The Chalice and the Blade. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her. She's written many, many books. These are just some of them. And a couple of the latest ones are Beyond Capitalism and Socialism, A Partnership Economy, and Nurturing Our Humanity, which I just ordered. So she is also centered on those questions. Her life's work has been that way. And she began that at a very young age, because at age 7 her family narrowly escaped the Nazi occupation in Poland during the Kristallnacht, which you may know about. So ever since that time she asked herself, why is there all this violence and all this suffering in the world, and are there alternatives, and if so, what are those, and how can we shift our society more towards those alternatives? So in her research, for some reason, it's counterintuitive for me, so I keep going backwards. She says that the underlying problem is not men as a sex. Now, sometimes we focused on how men and women are socialized, and I sometimes hear jokingly that it's like women need to run the world. Well, really, that's not the answer. Women as well as men are socialized in the same way. And the root problem is really in our social system that encourages violence and dominance, and where we all learn that somehow violence and dominance are the ways to handle things. And where we all learn that, you know, I can even fall into this myself, and I've studied and preached about it so much, not really preached, but that, you know, qualities are not masculine and feminine, but we kind of see them that, and we can have reactions to people when they don't match up with somehow what we were socialized to think. So there's a cost to this for men and women. Sexism is one form that domination takes, the cost really is for maybe less apparent for men, but it's like when half of our population is socialized that somehow it's not okay for them to feel other than anger, and that they need to man up and that sort of thing, those kinds of messages do not help us to have the kind of society that we want. However, domination hierarchies and the entitlement inherent in them, according to Eisler, and I agree with her, are really the taproots of all forms of violence and injustice, whether that's racial injustice, economic injustice, gender, and so forth. So Eisler studied the ancient cultures and noticed something very important, and that is that they were not patriarchal. They were also not matriarchal, and sometimes we think in that binary way that, well, if it's not patriarchal, then it has to be matriarchal. No, they were partnership societies. That's her name for them. that they worked together. The feminine and the masculine complemented one another. They were much more egalitarian. And these are some of the characteristics of partnership societies. Mutual trust and low degree of fear and social violence. Equal valuing of males and females. Generally, they were egalitarian in social structure. They had hierarchies of actualization, and I'll talk about what that means. And myths and stories honor partnership and present it as normal. Along about the 5th millennium BC, however, nomadic peoples moved in that had a different social organization, and it was more based on domination. And gradually, that worldview was substituted. And she labeled those domination societies. They typically have a high degree of fear and violence. They rank male half of humanity over the female half, and I added and gender nonconforming because really gender is not binary, as we're finally recognizing. Authoritarian social structure, hierarchies of domination, and myths and stories idealize domination and violence and present them as normal. Think about how much of our media is really focused on violence. In order to move, you know, it would be good to revive more of the partnership worldview. Well, the good news, of course, is we do have threads of that throughout our society. But to have that to be more dominant. But in order to do that, I think we have to recognize how we think as human beings. So one of the things we do that's good for us is we organize, we think, we dichotomize, we kind of divide things into groups. Okay, that isn't necessarily bad. And I included Groucho Marx because, add a little humor, there's two kinds of people in the world. Those who think people can be divided up into two types and those who don't. Groucho Marx. So, you know, we just do it. It's just what we do. It isn't necessarily a bad thing, only if we start to label people as good or bad. So Eisler talked about what happens is we sometimes develop hierarchies, right? And they also are not necessarily good or bad. Actualization hierarchies help us to organize and be effective. So you can see that, you know, the most elemental is like parent and child, right? They're not equal. We need to teach teachers and students. At work, often it's helpful to be organized in terms of some sort of a hierarchy because that helps us to accomplish that task, particularly in larger organizations. So not necessarily a bad thing. It only becomes dysfunctional, in my term, when the domination and when it becomes a domination hierarchy, which means that they're infused with fear and domination. It means that some become good and some become bad. Some become strong, some become weak. So for instance, with the gender and so forth, when there has to be a good and an evil sort of thing. So that's when it goes wrong, in my view. So understanding that we tend to do this, and it isn't just out there. It's like we all tend to do that to some extent, particularly when we get triggered, when, you know, when my sister visits me, we always have to have at least one fight, right? And so it's real easy for me to lose my grounding in terms of really seeking to understand her point of view and disagreeing respectfully. So it's important to look at how injustice anywhere is really a threat to justice everywhere, as Martin Luther King said. And domination hierarchies and the entitlement that goes with them are really the taproots of all violence and injustice. Now, I included just three types of religion that we tend to think of, but there are many, many types. And within Christianity and Judaism and Islam, there are many, many types. But you can see that all have principles and values that really are threads of the partnership that continue today, right? So why aren't we living these values from our spiritual traditions? It's a good question. We deviate, I think, because dominance is just so ingrained in our thinking. So I'm just going to compare assumptions that I extrapolated from Eisler's work, and for the dominator societies, power is finite, That means there's only a limited amount of power. So if I perceive you as having power, then that means something bad about me, or that I have to compete somehow. Power comes from power over others rather than from within. Differences are threatening, and some people and groups have greater worth. That just permeates our culture and comes out in ways that sometimes we don't always recognize. Whereas partnership assumptions, our power is infinite, there's not a limited amount. Power can flow both ways, so even if you have a hierarchy going or people have different roles, that doesn't mean that they can't complement one another and that they can't share that power. Diversity enriches and strengthens rather than it being something scary. And all have inherent worth, which is in your bond of union. So much of the conflict, really, that we have, whether it's between individuals or in our institutions, comes from the tension between those two sets of assumptions, how they're working. So it's easy to focus, as I said, on how others live their values or don't. I just want to look through, I extrapolated some dominator society beliefs that also correspond with controlling partner beliefs, because as I said earlier, I focused a lot on intimate partner violence. So dominance by some is normal and right. We lose if we're not in control. It's easy to kind of feel like that. Might makes right. Anything different must be bad. Diverse viewpoints aren't valid. Problems are deserved. We're in control. We know best. These exist on a continuum in our society, and they exist on a continuum in ourselves, and we kind of go back and forth with it. I know it's easy for me to move into, you know, if somebody thinks differently than I think, politically, for instance, to sort of assume that somehow all of their viewpoint can't be valid, and therefore there can be no conversation. So, think about it on a continuum. These are what intimate partner survivors have reported to me, that they get behavior where their partners feel entitled, their needs and wants always come first. If I'm not in control, you're controlling me. My way is the right way. I must do whatever it takes to maintain control. I'm okay, you're not okay if you differ from me. Your needs, wants, feelings, opinions aren't valid, and you made me hurt you. It's a crazy making one. I control you because I love you. So those are just, that's like one extreme of the continuum, but it really comes out in many ways. So how can this be? Why we stray is sort of understandable. What's important is that we observe that we're straying. And I like George Orwell's term in 1984 called doublethink as a way of thinking about it, because we can hold opposing beliefs without really realizing it. So unless we bring that into our awareness. And I think that's what happens and why people can espouse the Christian belief of love your neighbor but still demonize other people. And it's also what permits victims' partners to say they love them while they're also hurting them. And it's why we struggle when we're angry with somebody. It's difficult to hold them in the light and see the Christ within them. And I included that. That's how Unity talks about it, but it's really about seeing the light in each one of us, which I know that you believe too. So Eisler says to let our awareness and action dance. Having programs like this is kind of part of that. I know that you're involved in many things that do, like social justice sorts of things. So there are many ways of that. I'm just going to include a few inspirational books that I found and people. Sharif Abdullah, in his book, Creating a World That Works for All, talked about something called deep identity, which is, you know, from an early age, at the earliest age, we are infused with whatever our race and ethnicity and culture is, our gender, our class, our religion, our language, all of those influence what we think the world is like and what our perspectives are and how we're going to take in that. And understanding that can also lead us to be able to have more empathy for other people. And curiosity. I think we need curiosity. It's like, okay, I don't agree with you, but tell me more about what it is that you're thinking. Because sometimes we find, as I love the children's book, that we find that there are things in common, and maybe those people aren't so scary after all. Maybe they aren't the monsters. Regardless of whether you think Marianne Williamson has a chance in the presidential race, I think that she's brought a good perspective into the race. And one of the things I took from her ad is, you make the reduction of unnecessary human suffering the guiding principle of domestic and international policy, not as charity, but as justice, not as a sign of weakness, but as a sign of strength. Now, oftentimes, people's reaction is like, oh, we can never have this. But why can't we have it? I think it's a failure of imagination, and it's a failure to challenge those beliefs. And then from kind of an unlikely source, David Brooks in the New York Times wrote an article actually talking about Marianne a little bit, but mostly it was about how Trump is a cultural revolutionary, not a policy revolutionary. He operates in subtly changing America at a much deeper level. He's operating at the level of dominance and submission, at the level of the person where fear stalks and contempt emerges. And the reason, I don't know if there are any Trump supporters here, I don't want to assume that there aren't, but really that can happen. People can prey on our fear if that's where we are. And so another person who actually is a Madison native, I didn't really realize, Parker Palmer. Unity does a book study group every year, and right now we're doing, just finishing Healing the Heart of Democracy, which I highly recommend. So he says, we must be able to say in unison, it is in the common good to hold our political differences and the conflicts they create in a way that does not unravel the civic community on which democracy depends. For those of us who want to see democracy survive and thrive, and we are legion, the heart is where everything begins, that grounded place in each of us where we can overcome fear, rediscover that we are members of one another, and embrace the conflicts that threaten democracy as openings to new life for us and for our nation. So, it's dance into action. When I picked this cartoon, it was fall, but it doesn't look very much like fall right now, but anyway. So, I know that we all have ways. We're all actively working in having peace in our society. What are some of the ways that you wrestle with your human identity, with how you were socialized, any limitations to help you create the world that you want to live in? And so certainly the Unitarian Universalist principles and Prairie's bond of union are things that kind of guide us. I find prayer and meditation is really helpful in terms of me coming back to some sort of ground. When I work with people with many different things, but certainly intimate partner survivors, I work with them in teaching them how to ground themselves, because when we experience any kind of trauma, we leave. Our bodies kind of leave, and it's hard to even be able to think clearly. And so prayer and meditation helps us all to think clearly, especially when we're challenged. Inspirational books, which I just sort of included a few, but I know that you know of many more. And my challenge to you is to use whatever the path of your choosing is with a person or an issue that challenges you during the next week or every week of your life, really. I found something just this week on Facebook that I wanted to read to you, and that is something by Dilgo Khyentse, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name. I think it's a him. Ill treatment by opponents is a catalyst for your meditation. Insulting reproaches you don't deserve spur your practice onward. Those who do you insult are teachers, challenging your attachment and aversion. How could you ever repay their kindness? Really hard to live, right? really hard to live. How am I doing in terms of time?
Lots of time left?
Okay. Well, then I'm going to read you another poem that's inspirational. Anybody know of Hafiz, the Sufi poet? I'll read you one of his poems. I like the humor that comes out in Hafiz, as well as the spiritual teaching. I know the way you can get. I know the way you can get when you have not had a drink of love. Your face hardens. Your sweet muscles cramp. Children become concerned about a strange look that appears in your eyes, which even begins to worry your own mirror and nose. Squirrels and birds sense your sadness and call an important conference in a tall tree. They decide which secret code to chant to help your mind and soul. Even angels fear that brand of madness that arrays itself against the world and throws sharp stones and spears into the innocent and into oneself. Oh, I know the way you can get if you have not been out drinking love. You might rip apart every sentence your friends and teachers say, looking for hidden clauses. You might weigh every word on a scale like a dead fish. You might pull out a ruler to measure from every angle in your darkness the beautiful dimensions of a heart you once trusted. I know the way you can get if you have not had a drink from love's hands. That is why all the great ones speak of the vital need to keep remembering God, so you will know, come to know and see Him as being so playful and wanting, just wanting to help. That is why Hafiz says, "Bring your cup near me, for I am a sweet old vagabond with an infinite leaking barrel of light and laughter and truth that the Beloved is tied to my back. Dear one, indeed, please bring your heart near me, for all I care about is quenching your thirst for freedom. All a sane man can ever care about is giving love." So my prayer for all of us is that we light a path of peace in everything we do. Namaste. Like, I didn't think to mention this before, but I don't know if you're familiar with Jennifer Siebel Newsom and her documentaries, Misrepresentation, The Mask You Live In, I think it is, and then she has a new one, which really focuses, and the name isn't coming to me right now, maybe it will in a moment, but it really focuses on the whole global stuff that we've talked about in terms of how our society is infused with dominance. Definitely. I'm thinking about some of the, there have been groups, I don't know if they're still going on, that have to do with having conversations between races. So that's sort of a similar thing. I think that the nonviolent communication that Rosenberg teaches, and something called the connection practice, which I've learned about, and I am not going to be able to come up with the name of the person who does that, but I could find it. But the connection practice uses Rosenberg's system of non-communication as well as something called heart math, which helps you to ground and center yourself. And, you know, so looking for those kinds of things, I'd certainly be able to help you with those resources. But yes, it's very important. I think anything that gets us to dialogue with people that are different than us. And one of the things that Parker Palmer says is that we're isolating ourselves into groups of people that all are the same, you know, and we need that. I mean, you need prairie, right, in terms of encouragement. Not that all of you think exactly the same way, but there's a lot of similarity there. But we also need to be dialoguing with those people that we perceive as being different and being able to find the commonalities. Well, I'm as challenged as anybody by some of the political stuff that's going on. And the challenge that I want to give myself is to really, instead of just backing away from somebody who might say something different, for instance, I was at an NASW conference, National Association of Social Workers conference, and social workers, you know, there's a lot of likeness there in terms of how we see the world, but I happened to ride on a bus to a movie with someone who said something. Now I can't remember what she said, but she said something that indicated, she was from rural Wisconsin, that indicated, oh, that she thought that that people were taking advantage of efforts to help with equality. And she just didn't see that there was the inequality with races that really exists, that has existed from slavery days, if we're talking about African American, even now has that kind of effect on people. And I just, you know, it was a short bus ride, but I didn't say anything. And I'd like to challenge myself to be able to actually give another point of view respectfully and be able to dialogue and to ask. And I think part of that is we have to ask, tell me more about why you think that way, so that we understand one another more. And then there's more of an opening for us to also share. So that's one. And then I already mentioned, I mean, I can get, my sister and I can really get into it. I've worked on that, though, in terms of not responding in kind, so.
Jennifer, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hello, my name is Andrew Garst, and my pronouns are he, him, his, and I've been tasked with reading the closing words. I am a man. I've got to look like a man. I can't admit that I'm afraid. I cannot say that I'm weak. I cannot say that I am tired. I'm not allowed to say that I'm sleepy, or I'm hurt, or that I can't handle this. When I cracked that egg for my son, he was free. And I've got to learn to keep cracking that egg for myself every time. Stand and greet your neighbors. So, thank you.